It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Anne Strangechamps. Where do you find wonder these days? What sparks it for you? Nature? Religion? Poetry? Lately, Shannon Henry Kleiber has been getting her dose of wonder from a kids' podcast that tells stories about creatures like Inky the octopus.
How did you find Inky's story, and how did it become so right for this show?
Yeah, okay, so I will admit, Inky was the laziest story. Like, I found this through the arduous work of reading a lovely children's book.
Lulu Miller is known for her curiosity-driven radio and podcast work, for shows like Invisibilia and Radiolab, where she's a co-host. But she has another project you might not have heard of, because she didn't make it for you. It's a Radiolab spinoff for kids called Terrestrials.
Okay, now is where I make you sing the theme song with me.
Okay.
Terrestrials, terrestrials, we are not the worst, we are the
Bestrials.
You got it.
I don't know, man.
Cy Montgomery had written about Inky's, this octopus.
Deep in the ocean off the coast of New Zealand.
This wild octopus is accidentally caught by a fisherman, a lobsterman, and he brings it to an aquarium.
So they had him in a tank and there was plenty for him to do. He had toys to play with.
And then it does something really shocking.
One morning, the keepers came in and Inky wasn't there. They saw a slime track going from his tank 8 feet across the floor, which led to a drain pipe. And this drain pipe was 164 feet long, and it dropped directly into Hawke's Bay.
It escapes the aquarium. It gets out of its tank. You know, it's a ready-made Finding Nemo story.
So it looks like Inky went home.
Wow. And no human has ever seen him again.
But it's so exciting, and there's so much hope in it.
Yeah.
I was rooting for Inky, as I'm sure all were, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It is time now for the mix. This octopus, Inky, actually made a break for it.
The world freaked out when they heard about Inky's story.
Inky the octopus making a break for it, slipping out of a New Zealand aquarium.
It's the Shoal tank redemption.
Inky is having a party right now.
But Cy says the most incredible thing about Inky's escape is that it's not incredible.
There are many, many instances of octopuses that have gotten out of their tanks.
It makes us also think, well, maybe I can do something unusual or unexpected, too.
Yeah, totally. And just that we, as humans and as scientists kind of parsing the world, we missed the intelligence of the octopus for so long because when they lost their shells, like other mollusks, they had to evolve something else to protect themselves. And it was a kind of cognitive superpower.
Lulu Miller has been on the Wonder Beat for years as a science and nature reporter, radio host, and podcast producer. And while she designed Terrestrials for kids, that might be just what grown-ups need too. Because so many of us live wonder-deficient lives, too busy or overwhelmed or stressed out to even remember what childlike wonder really feels like. Shannon Henry Kleiber can relate.
So, Lulu, what inspired you to create Terrestrials?
I became a mom. I now have two young boys. And I started to find the minds of kids really interesting.
Yeah.
I hadn't grown up around kids. And then I suddenly realized, oh, they're a demanding audience. They want real humor.
They can think really deep thoughts. They're not all locked in with assumptions yet. I was finding myself having these really almost like psychedelic conversations with my son about what things are in the world. But then it was also partly selfish. It was partly my own craving. I started it about a year into the pandemic, and I suddenly just felt really hungry to think about nature.
I love that. How old are your kids and what were they asking you?
So now they're 4 and 1.5. The older one, there were like interesting mashups of words and understandings. He was calling anything that was kind of green and scaly, he would call a fish. So it would be like a turtle was a fish, but a plant moving, the leaf moving was a fish. And anything that was kind of a little land animal, dogs were dogs and cats were dogs and little ants were dogs. Mm. And then anything that flew was a duck. And watching his mind try to group the world and see what went together and try to make associations and understand things just felt like, oh, I just want to have this conversation again and again and test my own assumptions, you know?
I so relate to that as a parent. My kids are teenagers now, but mm-hmm. I remember when they were really little, I would sometimes see things through their eyes suddenly, you know, staring at an icicle or they're looking at this tongue on a goat in the zoo and they, you know, nothing that I would have maybe noticed, a ripple on the sand on the beach.
Absolutely. Or even, it's like we were at the beach on a cold night and we were talking about the word horizon and we were looking out and he said, you know, maybe if we go in Uncle Jim's boat, we could touch the horizon. I don't know. So it's an audience who is thrillingly alive.
Lulu, how do you think about wonder? What is your understanding of wonder?
Oh, well, so I think of it as, yeah, it's this thing that's often kind of eye-rolled into the corner and dismissed as trivial or twee or just for children, and you picture it with bubbles all around, and there's a naivete or an innocence. But interestingly, I don't know, I'm an etymology nerd, and so the root of wonder is kind of deliciously and fittingly unknown. So if you go to its cousin, its synonym, awe, the root of that is Old English ege for terror. And I think these moments of wonder, these bubbling up feelings of, whoa, there is a terror in it. There is a feeling small before the world. And I think moments of wonder are being kind of, you're brushed up with this feeling that, wait, maybe you don't have everything figured out yet. And that feeling for me is the best feeling because it opens up an authentic sense of hope, an authentic sense of possibility. And so you have to like have faith that there might be a surprise.
3, 2, 1.
Imagine you are a liquid creature. No bones, and you are so pliable that you can literally pour your body through a tiny opening.
You can change colors.
Blue and green and red and yellow and even metallic.
You can taste with your skin.
And you have blue blood and you have 3 hearts. And if you're threatened, if you feel scared, you can shoot ink
into a silhouette in the shape of you.
So the predator is fooled into believing you're still there.
Now, look down at your arms and watch them slowly sprouting into 8.
You are an octopus now.
Why do you think that sometimes adults lose the sense of wonder? These, I don't know, moments of total not worrying about what anyone else says out in the natural world. How can we get that back?
It's hard. I mean, I think it's, of course, we got to lock it up sometimes, you know, like there are jobs to get and confidence to project and taxes to pay, you know, like if we were always in a state of wonder, is this a couch or is it maybe a bomb? Like you have to just sometimes parse the world and move forward. It's a stilling process where you stop and pause. We can't always pause. I have complete empathy for why you've got to put it away just to go be an adult. But to get it back, I think it's the practice of noticing whatever is authentic to you, like when you feel that little tickle on your heart, you feel that little pull, what does that mean? Or you read a headline that just gives you that eerie feeling of wanting to know more or being surprised that something worked that way. I think it's just getting better and better at trusting that and not judging it and just thinking, wow, stories about math really interest me, or stories about breakdowns really interest me, or stories about how money works really interest me, or maybe it's nature, or maybe it's poetry, but just like, don't judge it. I don't know. I think it's just noticing when you get that tickle and then cherishing it and following it. But just, it's sacred when that tickle comes, because that feeling is reminding you, oh, you care about something.
And sometimes it can be really little. Like, actually, one of my teenagers, one of them was saying, I just really like this particular color of green so much now.
Huh.
And I said, oh, wow, that's really cool. And she showed me the color and we started seeing it different places. And so now when we go places, we're looking for that particular color of green. It's got a little blue in it. It's hard to even describe.
Is it like teal?
It is, but it's greener. I don't know. It seems small, but I was really happy for her that in this realm of everything else, you know, going to school and everything she's doing, that she's thinking about this color that she's interested in.
Like, having a hunt is so fun. Just whatever the hunt of the gifts the world gives you. I think that's a very liberating, rejuvenating feeling, to have sort of like an engine, to feel the engine in you that wants to go out into the world, that wants to ask questions.
Right.
Hi, my name is Fievel. I'm 5 years old. And my question is, what's your weirdest fun you've ever had in the water by yourself?
Kind of a gross side note, but
yeah,
I would think about...
That's what we're here for.
I would think traveling as when I was young, like we'd go to Niagara Falls and like I would just spit in the water and be like, it's traveling all over the world now. Like I'm all over the world and I'm...
Like through the waterways, because it's going out to the ocean, and then some waves will pull it over there to the continent of Africa, and some will go up to the Arctic, and AJ is now connected with everyone.
Yeah.
What a deep thought. You really thought that? You weren't just like, here's a loogie.
No,
like,
I was an introspective four-year-old. I would think about where it would travel, and eventually maybe it would come back to me after it's gone around the entire world. And
you'll be taking a shower someday, and you're like, four-year-old me is saying hi.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was wondering, too, about your childhood,
yeah,
Lulu. So were there experiences that were formative or memorable for you growing up that... You're seeing this through your kids' eyes now, but what about your own childhood?
I mean, yeah, I think that mainly nature was just this hugely, perpetually safe place. I am someone with a lot of feelings. Therefore, the human world can sometimes be this just like minefield of, oops, I made someone mad, or I feel guilty, or oops, you know, my oldest sister was bullied horrifically. And just watching that in like the 80s, where especially kids, there was just less awareness about cognitive differences and she struggled with certain stuff. And just, I remember watching that as a kid and just thinking, oh, the human world can be so brutal. And I think I just always, my dad would take me hiking all the time. And he's a scientist, so he was very into pointing things out. Oh, fungi, that's algae met a fungi and they took a lichen to each other. Lichens made of fungi and algae. Anyway, it just was always this place where there was interest, there was beauty, the air changed, it's more oxygenated, there are all these smells, there's pines and flowers and lakes to jump into and pull up a rock and find a beetle and a worm. And I just... Throughout my childhood and then just throughout my whole life, it just is this realm where I feel safe, I feel rejuvenated, and I feel it's easier to access my wonder and my questions. And again, as much as you think about Linnaeus, who named the world, and this giant book, Systema Natura, like there's a sense everything is known, but it's not. There are so many questions, and that's why I love science reporting.
Yeah.
There are just so many questions left, and nature to me feels like a reliable place to kind of encounter those questions. Now, As for the end of the story of what happened to those gravitational waves from those two black holes that collided long ago, well, after they literally rocked our world, get it? Because they, like, rocked the planet when they hit. Well, they just kept rippling out into the universe, passing by stars and moons.
What I imagine is the amount of unimaginable things those ripples may find on their way. As they travel into infinity, right? The wonderful things that they will
like
find.
Like what? Like planets and comets and suns?
Beyond unimaginable.
As I was listening to your episodes, I was thinking about Rachel Carson, and I found this quote that you probably know. It's one of her famous quotes. If a child is to keep alive his inborn sense of wonder, he needs the companionship of at least one adult who can share it, rediscovering with him the joy, excitement, and mystery of the world we live in.
Oh, that really moves me. I think, I love that. My wife is a psychologist. She works in the NICU at a hospital where parents are dealing with very scary stuff. What she works on is kind of how giving parents even just a little bit of mental health care can help improve the baby's outcome. She was practicing a presentation to me, and she started with this quote by Winnicott, this famous child psychologist who said, basically, it said babies don't exist. They are always in relationship with an adult. Like a baby in particular, you know, would it last a day without an adult? Like it cannot exist without a relationship. And I feel like this Rachel Carson thing gets at it too, where maybe a kid is a little bit older and they could survive for a little bit without an adult. But to keep the wonder alive, you need the conversation.
Right.
And just that. I think increasingly, as I get older, I don't know, I think relationships and conversation, real conversation, confusion, maybe even conflict, resolution, like that is the real stuff on Earth. It's so exciting. It's like there's sparks there.
And I don't care if I'm alone in this and nobody believes. I will swim this sky forever. I will always feel the breeze when everything that is familiar fades to black and turns to cold. I will listen on in wonder, unimaginable.
That was Lulu Miller.
Unimaginable.
Talking with Shannon Henry Kleiber.